Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, and welcome to Goalie Day around the NHL. Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago. Braden Holtby bought out. Martin Jones bought out as well. A whole lot of information and further speculation about goaltenders on the move today. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Elliot Friedman is going to stop by here in about 5 or 6 minutes' time. Elliot's actually been talking about Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago now for a while, so we'll sharpen the pencil on that deal here in a couple of seconds. Rattled off Martin Jones, Braden Holtby as well. Those are two other goaltenders making headlines today. A lot of information, a lot of news coming out of last night as well. Stastny re-ups. We'll get that talk here in a couple of moments. But I want to start with the Marc-Andre Fleury situation here. Goes to Chicago. It is a $7 million cap hit. Some speculation, as Elliot reported, that if he ends up getting traded, he would retire, does not want to leave Vegas. Family reasons cited, and we understand that. Another side of this, according to Jesse Granger, tweeting that he found out through Twitter as well. Borny, we'll start with you. What do you make of the latest Marc-Andre Fleury saga? Because there's been a couple of Marc-Andre Fleury sagas in Vegas.
Has to be the first time someone has wanted to not leave Vegas for family reasons. Usually you need to leave Vegas for family reasons to keep it intact. But that's wildly fascinating and almost like a no-risk acquisition by the Chicago Blackhawks. Like, they either get elite goaltending or he's going to retire, and they did Vegas a favor, and that's pretty much all that happens here. Kind of feels ruthless on Vegas's part. Like, you know, they're basically saying either forcing him into retirement or to somewhere, you know, they knew he didn't want to be. But I guess it makes sense given Vegas's cap situation with their two goalies and where Fleury's contract was at.
Stewie?
Yeah, and again, it's the cost of doing business. But remember, the business goes both ways. And I don't really, you know, appreciate when people say, well, the players agree they're taking too much money. But there's situations like this where, you know, you can't blame them. And Vegas Golden Knights, the way that they're conducting their business with not just, you know, regular NHL players, but star Hall of Fame type of players, I think it's kind of disrespectful. And he's a Hall of Fame goaltender here, and he's had to find out about a trade via Twitter. If the deal's close, especially in this time of social media and everything's leaking, you have to let him know, give him an idea that he's going to be getting traded, because I'm sure him finding out this way has something to do with him saying, you know what, I'm not leaving.
Unless maybe, and I'm just trying to think of like what the strategy would be not to tell him or his agent right away. If indeed this part of the story is bang on, I've got no reason to believe that it's not. You know, unless Vegas didn't want to give the Fleury camp enough lead time to get a retirement story out there and thereby killing the trade. I don't know. Like, I'm sort of grasping at straws to like what the motivation would be. Like, I understand. I remember Nazem Kadri was, and he talked about this with Christine Simpson, was upset that Kyle Dubas, didn't tell him about the trade personally. And it's like, well, I mean, in the world of social media right now, you're going to find out about it before. So if, I think a phone call is sufficient right now. But honestly, like the way that business is being conducted right now, and we knew that these couple of weeks were going to be quick, and there were going to be sudden decisions and sudden movements, and there were going to be, I don't know, how shall we frame it, information victims, or they'd be information casualties. Like, if you find out about it on Twitter, oh well, how many people have found out they were, you know, traded during our trade deadline coverage? Plenty. It's just the reality of how information flows now. A couple of things here. Borny, we'll start with you. We saw the Seth Jones deal last week, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks. Now the Marc-Andre Fleury deal to the Chicago Blackhawks. Does this indicate to you that in Chicago's mind, the rebuild is either A, over, or B, they just want to accelerate it?
Yeah, it's tough to tell what it would indicate. By the way, Alan Walsh just tweeted that while Marc-Andre Fleury still hasn't heard from anyone with the Vegas Golden Knights, he has apparently been traded to Chicago. Fleury will be taking time to discuss the situation with his family and seriously evaluate his hockey future at this time. So I'm not sure if that helps shed any light on things, but there is some bitterness in that text or that tweet. As for Chicago, I just feel like they had the opportunity to lock up a top pair guy, and they saw that that made a lot of sense for them. And then the Fleury thing just makes sense too. Like, sometimes I don't know that everything fits into a master plan so much as you just have to take what's available at the time. And on their face, I think both of these moves, you know, the Jones one, you can quibble with the cost or whatever, but they make sense for their timeline to win a Stanley Cup.
Stu, I want to get to you on this one here in a couple of seconds. Elliot Friedman's with us from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Friege, we talked about this on the podcast for a couple of weeks now, really, and even on the most latest edition of the pod. Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago, and as you tweet, something to watch. Marc-Andre Fleury may choose to retire if traded from Vegas for family reasons. I described this to Borny a couple of seconds ago as a saga, and there have been many of them for Marc-Andre Fleury in Vegas. What do you make of the latest drama involving the goaltender?
Well, I was on NHL Network last night, and they asked me about the possibility of Fleury to Chicago. And, you know, we've all heard the rumors, as you said, Jeff, but one of the things I was working on last night that I was unable to confirm was that that message was going to be conveyed to the Golden Knights. You know, as you said, Alan Walsh has now tweeted he wasn't talking last night, but I had heard from another team that had been sniffing around the Vegas goalie situation that the word was that Fleury would let them know if he was traded, he might retire. And I think Vegas kind of looks at it as, well, that's a threat and we still have to do our business anyway. And that's probably why the return was so small, because they know it's a possibility. I would think that Chicago, you know, Chicago has been in on him for a while. I think they're really interested. I have no doubt they'll speak to him about, you know, can they convince him to go? I mean, a lot of people point out that, you know, he's owed about $7 million. That's true. And I don't know too many people who would walk away from that, but he has made a ton of money. You know, we'll see. I mean, like I said, I'd heard this last night that it was a possibility. I think Vegas sees it as a bluff, and we're going to find out if it's a bluff or not.
How do you see this one? Stu, I'm handing this to you right after. How do you see this from both sides, just from a hockey point of view? I was asking, you know, the rebuild question for Chicago, your thoughts on that, and what does this mean for Vegas as well now that they have some newfound cap space? Friege, you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking Stewie. So that's
no, I'm going to hand this over.
Why would he be asking me? I work here.
Well, you know what? I heard you say I'm handing this over to Stewie, so I totally zoned out with just the rest of your question. You know, Vegas is the rest of their cap space. I would expect that they're going to go after a center. You know, they've got – it's not announced, but we all believe they've got Alec Martinez signed at approximately 3x5. Mm-hmm. And so they've got about, I think, $6.5 million, depending on what they do to facilitate a trade. I think they're in on centers. You know, Eichel would potentially be one. I think Ryan Strome would potentially be another. Maybe Philip Deneau a third. You know, we all saw it last year. What was their big Achilles heel? It was down the middle. And I think they're aggressive. They're going to go out of their way to address it.
So, Friege, I know this is like a small story, you know, in the bigger picture of the Vegas Golden Knights, but do you see this a big problem, the way that they're treating these veteran guys, training them, you know, not really conferring in them with when they have to make moves here, confiding in them, excuse me. Do you see that being a long-term, you know, problem for them when they're trying to get free agents, or they're going to stop at nothing to win and it doesn't really matter?
You know, it's a really good question, Stewie, because I remember last year in the 48 hours – Like I'll tell you a story last year. In the 48 hours before they signed Petrangelo, as the rumors were going on there, I heard that about the potential of the Schmidt trade to Vancouver. And I started looking into it. And, you know, people were all of a sudden, like I started getting texts from a bunch of Vegas players. Have you heard my name? Have you heard my name? And, you know, Schmidt had just signed and, you know, some guys were really upset about that. I think this particular situation is a deeper issue. Like, you know, because of the picture of Fleury with the sword, I think that, you know, even though, you know, the market loves Fleury and the owner loves Fleury, I always wondered if this would be the way that it was going to end. because there were certain people in the organization who never forgot that. I don't know if get their revenge is the right way to look at it, Stewie, but I just think they never forgot it. And I do think there are players like going to Vegas. It's a great place to live. As you said, the team will do anything to win. You're treated very well while you're there. Their team services are excellent. But yes, I just remembered that whole situation last year with Pietrangelo and how many players and agents were reaching out to see, you know, who was in the rumors and who was going to have to go to make space for him. I think there is an understanding there, though, that, you know, if you don't have control over your future, then you're in a situation where anything can happen.
Elliot, how is this year's UFA Day feeling different than previous years? And maybe it's not, but to me it just feels like with Seattle coming in and the salary cap being flat for years in a row, do things feel different? Am I right in that?
I thought they would, but it seems as crazy as ever. You know, Justin, yeah. what is different for me this time around is that I think that that because the cap isn't rising, GMs have to make moves that they may not have made otherwise.
Right.
Like this, the Vancouver trade, would that have been made if the cap was still rising? You know, some of the stuff Columbus is doing, like they might have decided to do it anyway, but they're, you have to make bolder moves. You know, even, you know, the Philly moves, they had to do this under a flat cap. I think mm-hmm. that, teams, like, there's two things. Number one, you want fans to want to come back to your building next year in a lot of cases. So you've got to do something. So either you're tearing it down, like Buffalo and Arizona are, or you're building it back up and you're giving fans a reason to come. You're trying to excite them. Or you're looking at your situation, you're saying, I don't like where we're going, and I have to do something bold to change it. Like, you know, leaving Carey Price unprotected, for example. You know, teams are doing things that I don't necessarily think they would have done, you know, even 2 years ago. And I think that's the difference about this year is because the cap isn't rising anymore, Justin, you can't really outweigh or outspend your mistakes.
Right.
So you have to find other ways to get around them.
You know, you, Elliot, on the podcast, shot down the idea, and this was a decision by the owners around the NHL for another round of amnesty buyouts. You talked about that before the bubble. That's a non-starter. All the money stays within the system, period. Just looking at the flat cap and trying to sort of creatively maneuver under that umbrella, do you know if there's ever been any conversation about essentially, and I know there is some with salary retention, but if there's ever been a movement to trade actual cap space, like use cap space as a commodity, we're Carolina. We've got $3 million of unused cap space. We will trade you that for a second round pick. Has that been discussed?
I haven't. I think it's been discussed. I don't know that it's going anywhere. I've never heard, like, I've heard people suggest it. I've never heard it actually gaining traction as an idea.
The only reason I bring it up is if the idea is to keep all the money in the system and all salaries, you know, all compensation is locked at 50%. I mean, it can't go above. And I know the players already have a major escrow check to write to the owners, but it does, quote unquote, keep all the money in the system. It doesn't go outside of the system. That's the only reason I bring it up. I remember mentioning it in 204-05, and Bill Daly shot it down right away, and I've always wondered if that was going to be a conversation that ever got picked up again. Let me get your thoughts on Chicago here. We talked on the podcast about Seth Jones and that deal and what that meant for the quote-unquote rebuild for Chicago. Now you couple that with a Marc-Andre Fleury move. Do we interpret this from Chicago's point of view as the rebuild is done, or just the rebuild is accelerating?
Oh, I think they're... How can you not think they're going for it now?
Like playoffs going for it? Like rebuild is done, that's it?
Well, I think you always have to draft and develop properly. But, you know, when you have Fleury in goal for 1 year and you just signed Jones, even though he's got 1 year left on the current deal, I mean, you're not... I can't imagine you're playing for 20th spot. You're going for it there. I think they're basically just saying we're tired of circling a little bit and we're trying something new. And you don't acquire Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury to, you know, finish seventh. You're going for it.
they do play in a tough division, though.
They do. I
point that out to you.
Yeah, I understand that, but like they could easily just sit there and say, okay, we'll let this year play out and see what we do. They're not doing that. They want to be in the race now.
Yeah, and Jeff, I think this goes back to us talking about Patrick Kane and Tay saying they don't want to be around for a rebuild. So I'm sure they had something to do with these trades too. So
I look at it the same way in L.A. I look at it the same way in L.A., Stu. We look at Doughty comes out and says, you know, we want to try to win. And, you know, look at some of the things they've done. They went out and they got Arvidsson. And I think they're looking at some other things too.
Yep. So the flooded goalie market got even more crowded with Holtby and Jones getting bought out today here. So what does this mean for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and what goalies do you think that they're going to be zeroing in on tomorrow?
Well, I think one of the guys they've kind of looked at a bit today is in the short term, because he's available by trade, is Kemper. But I don't know if they're as in as some other teams are. Like, Arizona's shown that they have a certain kind of deal they're hoping to do, right? And I don't know, like, Toronto just doesn't have that much draft capital that they can do what some other teams could potentially do. So I think when I see that, I see the situation where he's like, they're in the mix on Kemper, but I wouldn't call them the lead. If they get him, it's simply because Arizona doesn't like anything else that potentially better. Like, I look at it, like, I've heard the same names as everybody else. I've heard Mrazek. I've heard Holtby. I don't think Anderson's coming back. You know, there's people who think that Brian Elliott might already be off the board and potential that there's some teams that really like him. I just think it's going to be someone like that, a Mrazek, a Holtby. I can't imagine if Grubauer doesn't get done in Colorado. Like, I think he's looking for Binnington, which is 6x6. I don't know if I see Toronto doing that. I don't know if that really is something that makes sense to them. So I think if they're unable to trade for Camperant, it's one of those guys that is sort of in the move between all these teams.
Elliot, we're like a week or 10 days or whatever the number is into me being like, what's the plan here with Seattle? Like, you know, they had all this time to leverage picks and make side deals and yada yada, and here we sit on the eve of UFA, and it looks like what they've done is sign a couple of UFAs and just kind of pick 30 guys. Is there more coming? What are they going to do with all this cap space that, you know, we keep hearing about them being able to weaponize? What's coming for Seattle?
Well, I think they're going to do some free agent stuff. I think Jaden Schwartz will likely be a Seattle Kraken. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one potential move. I think that they could move some of their excess D. I know there's been interest in some of those players. I wonder if they're going to be in on Deneau. I think Deneau is going to be one of the more interesting guys tomorrow when we see, you know, what he comes down with and what happens with him. But wow. I think that I look at Seattle and I look at their roster and I say, what do they need? I think they need centers. And so I think they're going to get Schwartz, who's, you know, not known as much about being a center. But I think they will look for centers, guys like Deneau, guys like Strome. And I think that's what they're going to do. And, you know, the other thing is, I still think that the cap is going to match.
Oh, we just lost Fridge on the Opal. That we'll try to get him back here on the program. You know, that's interesting about Jaden Schwartz. I think the St. Louis is going to be one of the teams to watch tomorrow. I think they're going to continue to be one of the teams to watch in the off season, whether it's the situation with Jaden Schwartz and where he ends up. Elliot mentioning Seattle, that wouldn't be a surprise. I know there was some discussion once upon a time about Vegas with Jaden Schwartz. There's a Vladimir Tarasenko situation and whether he gets dealt. Like, this is still a team, guys, that's very much in the go-for-it mode. And we mentioned Chicago is playing in that tough central that has, you know, Colorado and a much-improved Minnesota Wild and the Dallas Stars and the Winnipeg Jets. And the St. Louis Blues are still very much in that mix. Arizona's clearly taking the step back to rebuild. We'll see what happens with Nashville as David Poile continues to change things around then. But I still think that St. Louis is, as much as they're infusing, you know, youth with, you know, Robert Thomas, who's due a new deal, Jordan Kyrou, who's also a restricted free agent. This is still a team I think that's going for it. And to me, the one to watch for tomorrow, and we'll get to this with Elliot, if Jaden Schwartz goes, there's a left wing spot open. Do you guys know any big ticket left wingers who may be captains of their team that were, well, let me ask this question then as Elliot joins us again. So Elliot, we're just talking about Jaden Schwartz there a couple of seconds ago. Do you know any team that if Jaden Schwartz leaves, that creates an opening spot for a top six left winger? Will any of those, Colorado, be available tomorrow?
So I did my predictions on Friday, on a Sunday night, and I put Landeskog and Colorado find a way. And yesterday I was really wavering on that because I heard it wasn't going anywhere. And now I think they're taking their last shot at it, right? Yeah. Like, I think at the end of the day, Landeskog wants to be a member of the Avalanche. I think he wants to win. And a lot of the other destinations out there that could make it fit, I just don't think they're as good. A, he's got a lot invested in the team, obviously. He loves it there. And B, I don't know how many situations he can go to where you're going to have a chance to win like Colorado will. So to me, that's the big question. You know, where is he going to? So I think they're going to take another run at this, and we'll see where we go. I mean, Colorado's been an interesting situation. They have a line when it comes to Landeskog. They have a line when it comes to Grubauer, and they've let both of those players know they're not going past it. And we'll see where it goes. But I think they've reengaged and at least seem to say, is there a way we can find it to make it work?
Let me follow up with one thing, and just seeing your tweet from about 20 minutes ago, Vancouver making progress with Connor Garland, of course, for fans that don't know, was part of the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal. AAV close to $5 million. Any more details on what's happening with Connor Garland in Vancouver?
Yeah, so they just announced it's 5 times 4.95.
Oh, they did, eh? Okay, 4.95.
Yeah, they just announced
it. How many years?
5 years.
Honestly, I know you and I got into this on the podcast a little bit. Right now, it's the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal. He's the headline maker here. Ultimately, could Connor Garland be the best player in the deal?
I think Garland's going to be huge there. I do. I think he's going to. I think they really like him. You know, the other thing too, I forgot, and someone pointed this out to me, was Travis Green saw a lot of him when Green was coaching in the American Hockey League, and I think he really liked him as a player. So I think there's going to be a lot of I think there's a lot of interest in him. I think they really wanted him. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for him there, and they're going to put him in a position to play and succeed, no question.
Stewie.
As I click on my daily face-off, shout out to Frank Saravalli there, I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they're very weak, for lack of words, on the left side here. Right now they're showing as their top winger on the left side, Mikheyev, Robertson, Engvall, and then they're just slotting Liljegren in the fourth line slot. So how are they going to fill all these roster spots come free agency and be continued Stanley Cup contenders?
Sorry, Ant, I got another text. Guys, I really apologize. There's a million things coming in. Can you repeat that one?
What are the Leafs going to do about this left side that's weak?
Okay. By the way, Anthony, you're like my teachers. I'm sorry. I don't understand the question.
Don't worry.
And then they
trust me, I know.
Slowly and really short.
No problem.
Ask me like I'm five. I'm five.
I'm having like high school and grade school.
No problem. No problem, Elliot. Not a problem.
I think Toronto is looking at it like our first thing we got to deal with is the goalie. Okay. And they got about a little under between 9-10 million of cap space, I think. The first thing they're going to do is the goalie. And then the second thing they're going to do after that is going to be what to fill out their forwards with. Like, I wonder about, like, it's so silly. Like, it's the Sioux thing, right, Ant? Like, you wonder about guys like Bunting and mm-hmm. Nick Ritchie. Mm-hmm. Do yeah, those become real. Players that they go after? I mean, Justin, yeah. I mean, like, those, like they're going to look for value. And, you know, those are the guys I kind of look at. But I think goaltending is their number one priority. And I think they're, even with some of the big numbers that are thrown out today and are coming out there, there's still going to be players who get squeezed a bit. And I think that's what Toronto's going to look to do, is see if they can find a situation where someone might be squeezed and they'll take an opportunity. They did that last year. They gave those opportunities to guys like Galchenyuk and Jim Vasey, and some work better than others. But that's what you try to do, is you have to find those kinds of players. You know, the whole Boston thing is really interesting to me, because last week Don Sweeney said that they were going to protect or qualify Richie and they were going to qualify Kotze, and then they changed their minds. And so that says to me that Boston's got something cooking, and I wonder if it's a guy like Blake Coleman. Like, I wonder if they looked at if that's the guy they're looking at. And I heard Coleman's market is around 6x5, and I just wonder if that's a guy that Boston zeroed in on because he fits their mold, and they had to make a change because that's what they might do.
God, that's so much money. One thing that blows my mind when looking at the UFA class, we don't hear much about a 28-year-old, 6'6", right-hand shot D who scores like 20 goals a year in Dougie Hamilton. Is he just going back to Carolina, or why is this not like teams clearing space to get this guy?
Well, I think like the team I've wondered is New Jersey. That's the team I've wondered if they're the team. Like, I think New Jersey wants to put some life into their fan base. Like, you saw their little party when they had Luke Hughes selected and how excited those fans were. I really believe they've had their eye on Hamilton for a while. And like I said, I think the Carolina's offer, initially at least, to Hamilton was around Torrey Krug, which is a little over 6.5. And I think that, you know, the Carolina's probably got some wiggle room there. But like, if we're talking like 7x8.5, I just don't think that Carolina's going there. And, you know, you just look around the league, Justin, there's always surprise teams. There's always someone who's going to come at it from nowhere, you think. But I just don't see a lot of places where there's the room to do that. And New Jersey, a team which wants to breathe some new life in, they sure have the room to do it.
All right. Lots there. Elliot, we'll let you go on that. It sounds like you're busy. Follow your Twitter. We know you're busy. Thanks for this. We'll watch for you on television tomorrow in a snazzy new suit, I'm sure, courtesy of Deb Berman.
Next time when I come on, which will probably be next year, I promise not to ignore your questions as much as I did today. I promise that.
I kind of like that. We'll talk really slowly. So you can actually read texts as we ask the questions. Thanks, Friedge. Be well. Good luck tomorrow.
All right, buddy. Take care.
There he is, Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. One thing that's sort of come up here a couple of different times on Twitter with the Marc-Andre Fleury deal to Chicago, he's going to take time and address this with his family, and he might retire and walk away from that final year. A few people have asked about what the cap recapture would be, what the penalty would be, and the answer is nothing because it's not a 35-plus contract. So we'll get that one out of the conversation right away. By the way, for purposes of buyout, we talked about Martin Jones, we talked about Braden Holtby. You can add James Neal of the Edmonton Oilers to that list as well. Man, there's a whole lot of names out there. Tomorrow is going to be a wild day. I want to pick up that conversation that you just had, Justin, a couple of seconds ago with Elliot about the New Jersey Devils and Dougie Hamilton specifically. Lots to get to, 30 minutes to do it. So get to the stop set, Merrick, and come back and chat it up. Let's go. Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a flash. Okay, so the news of the day, if you're just joining us here on Hockey Central, Merrick Stewart and Bourne. Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago. He has 1 year remaining on his contract, AAV of $7 million. Michael Hakkarainen goes the other way. So it's essentially Chicago absorbs the entire cap hit, gives the Vegas Golden Knights some cap space, as Elliot just mentioned with us a couple of moments ago, believed to be a deal in the drawer right now for Alec Martinez at $3.5 million. That leaves them some cap space and some room to maneuver around trying to get a first-line center. Names out there, Philip Deneau, Ryan Strome, and the biggie, Jack Eichel. And if you're Buffalo here, guys, and you just saw what Columbus was able to get for Seth Jones, if you're Buffalo, are you not licking your chops and saying, hold on a second here? We keep hearing that our ask is too high for Jack Eichel. But given what Chicago just paid for Seth Jones, how can we consider what we want anywhere close to being too high? You guys have a thought on that one? Like, Buffalo's asking for a ton.
Yeah, I
have Eichel's thought, a top 10 player, man.
Yeah, I look to the NBA and I think of like Paul George, what he eventually fetched from, I think it was OKC, was it like 9,000 first round picks, I believe is the exact total of the return. Like, they recognize the value of a star, and in the NBA it's more valuable to have a star than it is in the NHL, but it's still so, so valuable. You just look at teams that win a cup. They don't win cups without elite players, without top end star players, and so that Eichel is on the market and available, I think some team is going to go over the top in a return, and I think they should. I think it makes sense to pay first-round picks. You pray that any of those picks can become half the player Jack Eichel is. So to get a guaranteed realized one in his prime, I think it's worthwhile. Someone's going to spend a lot, but there's a lot of teams who need an infusion of talent like Eichel can bring.
Well, I think, you know, Kekalainen's been around for a while. He's with St. Louis in player development. And so I think it's all about a respect factor. And Kevin Adams is a rookie GM, so I'm sure the other GMs out there are going to try to pull one over on him. And I think this has a lot to do with the injury problems of Eichel. How hurt is he? Does he need the surgery? Does he not? So I think all this media stuff over the last year and a bit of him, you know, playing, not playing, him wanting out, I think that's decreasing his value. So I think right now, if you hold on to an asset too long, it starts to diminish. So I think the time now, they got to get it done, I think, this week. If not, I think the price is going down, not up.
Yeah.
Interesting. It does feel very much like, and listen, maybe we're just so used to this with Vegas from day one, that, you know, after the success of the first season and knowing how Bill Foley, the owner, right away said, we want to win a Stanley Cup. What did he say? 5 years? And we all sort of snickered at that. And then the first season, they made it the Stanley Cup final. And we said, maybe we should just be quiet about snickering at Bill Foley. They've been in on all the big names. And they've made big trades. And they've given away players like, you know, they gave away all three of, I shouldn't say give. They've traded away all three of their, you know, preliminary first rounders. Nick Suzuki, Eric Brandstrom, Cody Glass is now gone as well. And they've just gone for it from day one. And on the one hand, you do love it. And you say, like, that is an organization that's committed to winning. It's going to be fun to be a fan. And then Stewie is always quick to point out, I think rightfully so, you know, what's the message to players? You know, how does Nate Schmidt feel about his time there? How is Marc-Andre Fleury feeling about his time there? You know, the minute there's a shiny new toy out there, and last summer it was Alex Pietrangelo, all of a sudden that cost you the Nate Schmidt, who was, along with Marc-Andre Fleury, the face of the franchise, happy to sell it, great in the marketplace, etc. You know, the minute they made the deal, you know, to bring in Robin Lehner, it was almost as if, okay, Marc-Andre Fleury watches on. And A, that was the owner's favorite player, the one who said, I want this guy to be a Vegas Golden Knight forever, and was the face of the franchise. So I don't know how to lean on this one, to be honest with you. But, I mean, there are going to be players that go if they make this move here with the Buffalo Sabres and aggressively pursue a Jack Eichel trade, which we all believe they are currently in the process of doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the point, you know, that Stewie is making is one Brian Burke has made in the past, you know, is that UFAs won't sign with the team then, right? Like, that it would be less appealing for a
Without protection. Serious protection.
It just feels like such a small issue to me. You know, I think everyone is, for the record, I agree with Stewie and with Berkey that it's disrespectful. It doesn't look good. I don't think I would want my organization doing it. I'm just not sure how much it's really going to cost them. Like, I feel like players are still going to see a great place to live and play in competitive team and still want to sign there if the money's there. But yeah, it is now the evidence is piling up that they're ruthless and they don't really care who you are or what you've done if they think they can get better.
Yeah, and you're seeing former teammates right now, Bo Bennett tweeting out support of Fleury, saying like, yeah, it's really tough to explain the respect factor and how things, you know, work around respect too. And again, for Bo Bennett to come out publicly and support his teammate, that just shows, you know, how disrespectful this situation is, because his social equity in the whole league amongst his teammates, I'm sure there's some teammates that aren't too happy. And I know a guy in Ryan Reeves there, he's all about respect, and I guarantee you he's going to have some words with management. He's known to walk into the office and let his thoughts be known too. So I know it's a small story with what goes around, you know, the NHL, but it is to the players something that's really important, and they're going to keep in mind. I had an opportunity, you know, when I was a free agent 1 year to sign with among two or three teams, and I chose the team that had the most security. You know, those teams where it was maybe a better situation to play, but they've been known to eat contracts of my number, you know, on the way to eating bigger contracts. So I decided to go somewhere where there's a little bit more security. So if I'm now looking at Vegas, I'm a mid-level to high-level guy here, I might decide, you know what, I want that extra job secured. I don't have to worry about picking up and moving in a couple years or getting traded to somewhere I don't want to go, and, you know, maybe take more money somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. I want you guys to put on Toronto Maple Leafs hats here for a couple of moments. And
it's been
on. You're Kyle Dubas.
I say people listening are like, really?
It's been on for years, guys. I'm going to rattle off a list of names of players that were not qualified by their teams. And we just had a brief conversation about this with Elliot a couple of seconds ago. And given the limitations cap-wise that the Toronto Maple Leafs find themselves in, how many, if any, of these names are attractive? Nick Ritchie, Andre Kasha, Ryan Donato, Danton Heinen, Jujhar Khaira.
Yeah, wow.
Those are just forwards.
I really like the Nick Ritchie one. If you're talking about guys who have shown signs of being a real player with upside, who they're familiar with, who kind of fit the mold of what they've lacked, like, isn't that the most obvious of that group for a fit with Toronto?
Hang on, let me just check here. Did he ever play for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds? Yes. So, yes, that does fit.
Is that a way to really build your organization? It's like,
no, it's not. And it's a real thing.
I know this guy when he was 15 years old. Well, I hope he's a different person than he was when he was 15, 16 years old. I hope he's grown and matured over that. So that's a tough barometer.
I will say, Stu.
Oh, well, I was stuck in the Sioux. If you're stuck in the Sioux and there's only thing to do hockey, of course he's going to be a dedicated athlete. There's nothing else going on in the Sioux. So,
but I saw someone
went out and lived some of his life.
I saw someone tweeting today that they saw like Anthony DeAngelo as a potential fit for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No chance that'll happen in Toronto. No chance.
I mean, I guess not. But like I just know that Dubas loves these guys that he's had before, and apparently it doesn't matter if they're good dudes or not, because, you know, if that happens anyway, I should say it doesn't matter because
I can't see DeAngelo.
I'm with you.
Toronto. No chance. Even though he did play for the Greyhounds.
Man,
I mean the speculation, you know, part of that speculation about Montreal too, I think might have been fueled with the Trevor Letowski situation going to Montreal. Letowski had him in junior as well, enjoyed his biggest success under him, so. That might have been some A to B. There was a couple of moments where Montreal tried to get him from the Rangers, even though the Montreal side has never confirmed that, I don't believe. So there has been some noise between the two, between the player and the team this season. And I think when Letowski went there, people said, well, hold on a second here. That might make more sense now than ever, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Montreal's got enough issues to deal with right now with Logan Mayo.
I want to ask quickly, Jeff, here, and Elliot just sort of glossed over it here, how there's not a bigger urgency about the conversation about what Toronto's going to do for their top six wingers. You need a winger to play with Austin Matthews and Marner, and you need a winger to play with Tavares. And are the answers Robertson and Mikheyev? So I'm surprised right now there's not really, well, what are they going to do? Who are they going to go out? Who are the targets? You know, are they going to get Nick Foligno? At what cost? And I don't understand how saying, well, you know what, they'll skim the market and get some cast-offs, and that'll be a permanent solution. I don't think that's the case at all.
I could see, to Justin's point, I could see Nick Foligno. Mm-hmm. Like, how could you not? I mean, if you're talking about the left side and you're talking about, again, toughness and someone that brings, you know, the ability to find the back of the nets at 25 years old.
I don't know if I mean for that top line, but did you mention in your list there, Jeff, Michael Bunting?
Did not put Michael Bunting, but there's another Sue Greyhound.
Another Sue Greyhound, 25 years old, 10 goals in 20 games last year. Like this, you know, I don't think it's impossible that they would have their eye on a guy like that. The numbers like him a lot, too.
I just think that they need to be in the conversations of a Brandon Saad and a Hoffman and a Tatar and a Schwartz.
They don't have the cap space for those
but
guys.
What, that's the problem.
They don't.
And we're going to be talking about it. We're going to talk about 2036.
Trade one of the top guys. I know, Stewie, but they're not doing it.
Doesn't seem like it anyway. No,
they're not doing it.
Hey, the one thing I wanted to get back to for sure, Jeff, was the New Jersey Dougie Hamilton thing. Do you not think Seth Jones is a comparable contract wise for what Dougie Hamilton should get?
I think
Elliot was talking about pretty low numbers. I thought.
Yeah. How old is Dougie Hamilton? 28, 29?
Yeah, 28.
Years old? The New Jersey Devils are a very analytically slanted team, not unlike other successful teams like, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning, for one. Thank you very much. Everybody, put it this way. It's more an exception now that you don't have a robust analytics department than you do. But New Jersey really goes, and that goes right to ownership and all the organizations that they own. They're an analytically driven team. And if you look at all the UFAs, I mean, who's the biggest analytics darling? And the thing about Dougie Hamilton is the underlying numbers are one thing. The boxcar numbers are a thing too. And those add up. That guy still produces. And from an underlying numbers point of view, that guy produces. To my money, and I keep banging this drum about Dougie Hamilton, I don't think that anybody one times a puck better in the NHL than Dougie Hamilton. To me, Dougie Hamilton checks both the analytics and the eye test. You know, you'll hear some old school hockey guys talk about, he's on his own and he's one man and he just does his own thing and he's not part of a team and the whole museum's conversation, blah, 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 blah. To which I say, I don't care. Can he play hockey?
Yeah, he's been a great fit in Carolina. It just feels to me like, you know, Elliot mentioned, I don't know, $7-8 million a year. I just can't see how he's worth less than Seth Jones. I mean, as a top pair guy who's 28, right shot, 6'6", you know, scores 15-20 goals a year. I don't know, maybe he's not tough or whatever. I don't know what it is, but just stunning to me that this guy is not more in demand.
Yeah. The whole thing in New Jersey on that back end seems to be built around a couple of players, two specifically, Ty Smith and Damon Severson. I think to a lesser extent, they're real happy bringing in Jonas Siegenthaler. I think Ryan Graves gives them some depth as well. It wouldn't surprise me to see Dougie Hamilton end up in New Jersey. I think they're going to be one of the more interesting teams to follow tomorrow, as a matter of fact, as the free agent window opens for teams. You have a thought on that one, Stewie? Dougie Hamilton?
Yeah, I'm just surprised. He must be really, really chasing that top dollar, right? Because I think just looking at this roster, I know they got some good young forwards coming in, and they got some young D and goaltending. They got to shore up a little bit too, but I think they're probably 2 years away. So for Dougie Hamilton to say, you know what, I'm going to leave this situation in Carolina where they're a contender, they must be potentially throwing some big, big money. So don't be surprised if you see maybe a nine there. So again, I'm not the insider with three R's, but to go to New Jersey where they're a couple years away, yeah, you got to show me the monies, as they say.
Probably put in that conversation too, now that they've drafted him and Jack went, you know, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs about it, Luke Hughes as well. So all of a sudden, remember, it wasn't that long ago we were having the conversation about where are the D in New Jersey, like what happened to all the defensemen. All of a sudden, it's whether it's, you know, Luke Hughes or Ty Smith or Damon Severson's seemingly been there forever. All of a sudden, this has got the makings of a really, really nice blue line for the future. Hit a break. More free agent talk on the horizon. If you missed the news of the day, just joining us, Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago. So the Blackhawks get a Vezina Trophy winner. However, we're told Marc-Andre Fleury, weighing his options, might not necessarily go to Chicago, is going to talk to his family and make a decision whether he reports or whether he retires. So wrinkles in this trade. We'll see how it all plays out. More Hockey Central in a moment. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Merrick alongside Stewart and Bourne. Tomorrow, the free agent window opens. We're on the air tomorrow morning and into the afternoon as well to document all of it. Stewie, we'll start with you. What do you expect? Like, what's the, for me, it's Landeskog, but what is it for you, or who is it for you? Are there big names out there that you have your eyes on more than other players?
Not necessarily, but I'm interested now because there's going to be a lot of goalies left without spots. It's going to be, you know, so many guys on the market right now, and it's going to be interesting to see what does Toronto do. Do they go for a full backup tender, or do they bring in a guy that could potentially overtake Campbell for a number one? So I'm keeping my eye on Toronto because I'm not sure that they're just going to go with a backup. I think they're looking for somebody big that could potentially be that number one.
Borny?
I'm just here for whatever happens with Jack Eichel. That's all I care about.
Let's go, Buffalo. Let's go here.
Yeah, let's get a move out of Buffalo. I want to see what's going on here. He's going to change the future of some team, including the Buffalo Sabres.
And we now wonder if it's Vegas. Now that they've moved Marc-Andre Fleury, cleared up some cap space, they still need to do some massaging to bring in someone like Eichel. But if Buffalo wants to move him out of the Eastern Conference, oh boy. There's a landing spot right there, and some salary cap space has now been moved to make that happen. Philip Deneau, that's another name potentially for Vegas, as Elliot mentions. Ryan Strome as well. No shortage of big names on the move as early as tomorrow. Landeskog for me, guys. Landeskog.